It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Older on one.
Eh, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is gonna be huge.
I think this is gonna be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Y'all ready for this?
Thank God it's...
Friday, it's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday.
Are you ready for an outstanding sports weekend? Buckle up, get ready for the ride up until 6 o'clock. This is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy, and we've always got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Questions, comments, suggestions, 46862. You know, our Friday music kind of gets me all fired up for Comet Hockey. Let's go, boys! Got to win three in a row this weekend to wrap up the regular season and get yourself into the playoffs. And there's some big news surrounding the ECHL involving the Wheeling Nailers. That's all I'll tell, because coming up in just minutes, Adam Lundy has the full story, the rest of the story. With Adam Lundy coming up in today's top headlines, also on the show, we'll talk about the situation in the ECHL with Justin Cohn. He'll be joining us to talk about this big weekend for the Comets, about 15 minutes down the pipeline. Also, hour number two, we get to talk to the play-by-play voice of the Indianapolis Colts, Matt Taylor. No, he does not work just 70 hours a year. Matt Taylor is going to fill us in on the Colts' prep for the NFL draft coming up later this month. Ready for a big weekend of Masters?
Yeah.
Comet Hockey?
Yeah.
I'm feeling Tin Caps pumped. Baseball.
All of it.
You know what? Maybe Mother Nature is going to allow us to play baseball tonight here in Fort Wayne.
Oh, fingers crossed, man. It's like...
You know what happened?
You get the opening day and
Dylan Sin showed up.
Oh, Dylan.
You know, as soon as Dylan came back from Arizona, Mother Nature's like, Dylan hasn't seen enough humidity, moisture, and rain, so boom.
Boom.
Yeah, Dylan Sin came back, claimed to be the Tin Caps beat writer, but we don't know, because since Dylan's been back in town, the Tin Caps haven't been able to play, so I blame it all on Dylan Sin.
We were talking to Mike Nutter and home opener on Tuesday, and he said, hey, we'll worry about the rest of the week later. I'm just glad we're getting opening day, this beautiful weather. Well, there's your opening day.
Apparently, a bunch of amateur meteorologists informed Mike Nutter, it's like, enjoy your opening day because the next 2 days. and he's like, I didn't want to think about the next 2 days. Well, the next 2 days were both rainouts for the Tin Caps. But it looks like there'll be baseball tonight. Looks like a nice day for tomorrow. Couple of games, 1 o'clock and 30 minutes to follow after the first game ends. And Sunday, it wraps up with an afternoon tilt against the Captains, a 1 o'clock start. Temperature Sunday, by the way, is supposed to be like mid to upper 70s. So now, you know, it could always change. We're dealing with the Midwest weather.
Yeah, liable to change.
But right now, looks like Sunday is going to be very nice and warm. Tomorrow, I think it's supposed to be mid upper 60s, something like that, with a lot of sunshine. And then Sunday, don't forget, after the game, the autograph signing is back. And they'll have the players signing autographs after Sunday's contest in the main concourse. They set up tables. Every player sits there. You just go through the line. It's an easy, simple way to not only meet the players face-to-face, but get an autograph. Of course, that entire autograph session brought to you by Midwest Box Breaks, our friend, our buddy, Ben Smith, who this weekend, he's got quite the weekend.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be doing stuff with the Comets. I know
tonight
he does.
Tonight he's off to the Comets. Sunday he'll be at Parkview Field with the Tin Caps. Yeah, it's the double dip weekend for him. And of course, Saturday night he'll be with the Comets.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it Saturday night? What are the home games this weekend? Is it Friday, Sunday, or Friday, Saturday?
I
know they play Toledo back-to-back, but I'm trying to remember the exact home dates. All I know is my calendar's full this weekend.
Yeah, they're at home tonight. They're on the road tomorrow at Toledo, and then they're back home on Sunday.
Okay, see, I started to get it crossed up in my mind, and I'm like, wait a minute. No, they finish the season at home, because then after the game, they have the season-ending awards.
Yep.
And hopefully that's not a swan song for the Comets, that it's the end of the season. But they have backed themselves up against the wall with the loss at Wheeling on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we'll learn more about Wheeling coming up in just a few minutes. Hey, the white smoke is puffing out of Rupp Arena. They have their Pope. Mark Pope is the new coach of the Kentucky Wildcats. He said yes.
He said yes.
This is almost like The Bachelor going around and saying, Melinda, will you accept this rose? And like three bachelorettes in a row say, nah, don't think so. You're not my guy. Something we basically never see. But, you know, Kentucky is a very proud program. I mean, the Big Blue Nation kind of believes this is the premium job in all of college basketball. And they were actually shunned not once, not twice, but three times that we know of.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody just refused to take their call, but Nate Oates said he was happy staying at Alabama. We learned that Danny Hurley had no interest in leaving UConn. And then the one that came close, Scott Drew, he at least kind of investigated it, had to have an overnight to make a decision, but ultimately decided Baylor was a better choice than Kentucky. Wow. Is that an insult to Big Blue Nation that a coach would rather coach at Baylor than coach at Kentucky? So what did they do? They kind of pulled an Indiana.
Yeah.
They went and found the best available coach they could find that had Kentucky ties, because that guy's not saying no, right? No, Mark Pope instead not only said yes, but then they put together this little video. Did you happen to see the video, Adam, on social media?
I did not.
Kind of, to me, a little shameful.
Mm.
They show Mark Pope with a suit and everything, and he talks about coming to Big Blue Nation and how fired up he was. And he pulls up, open the rips off the buttons on his shirt, pulls it open, strips off the suit, and he's wearing a Kentucky jersey underneath. The entire thing was shot in BYU's gym with BYU Cougars right in the background.
Oh, that's a little.
I'm like, man, you're leaving BYU.
You couldn't.
You
just
don't do the Kentucky video.
Just find a blank background somewhere.
Find something, yeah. Green screen, do something.
Find a wall that doesn't have the word BYU on it.
Yeah. I thought, okay, you know, that's cool to do to show just how fired up you are about coming to Kentucky. But,
right.
You know, you probably should have thought this through just a little bit better.
A little bit.
But Mark Pope is coming back. A couple of years at BYU where he did a great job. I hope he's prepared for what he's going to face at Kentucky.
Yep. That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. I don't know if Mark Pope is the name that's going to keep all of the guys together that they've recruited. He may have to kind of rebuild the roster. But one thing Mark Pope is credited with is kind of what BYU's done over the last couple of years, which has turned into an outstanding offensive program.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's very creative offensively in the way the offense is structured and just his understanding of how to attack a defense. He's gotten a lot of credit out of BYU. I don't think he's a bad coach, but I don't know if he's the caliber of what you'd expect Kentucky to be hiring. Like,
right.
If you talk about if Kentucky's job ever opened up, and then, of course, this year it does, and you talked about, you know, the pool of candidates, we would think all the biggest names in college basketball, you just go through the 1, 2, 3, 4, and to have some of those biggest candidates, and I think they were just getting tired of being turned down. They had to find somebody that they felt could do the job that was going to say yes instead mm-hmm. of going through the public humiliation of being continually told no.
Yeah, it just looks worse every time another coach.
How many times do you invite people to a wedding and then you get walked away on the altar?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of this, it's just bad. Didn't look good.
Yeah.
But yeah, the white smoke is puffing out of Rupp Arena. And Mark Pope is the next coach of the Kentucky Wildcats. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. You can tell us what you think about the Kentucky hire, and now you've got Kentucky under Mark Pope versus IU still under Mike Woodson coming to an arena near you in a couple of years.
Couple years.
Well, and we don't know if Mike Woodson's really going to be.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. Don't want to jinx anything, But Indiana seems to be making some strides. You know, Indiana has two things going for it in the transfer portal. Number one, they've got the cash. Anymore, you've got to have, quote, salary cap. I mean, that's basically what it is. Schools that have a limit to what they've got available in the NIL, and maybe certain players already on the roster are taking big chunks of it. Maybe that's not the place. And so some of the experts, the crystal balls, so to speak, are going through and saying that Indiana has the lead on a number of the top transfer prospects.
Yeah, it's exciting. These guys could potentially land with the Hoosiers, and they're drawing some attention from some of these guys that kind of plan out where these transfer portal guys could go. And
they rank them. They try to figure out who will fit and where they'll be interested in going and who has interest in them.
Right. In my mind, I picture a bunch of wizards sitting around at a council table, and they all have their little crystal balls that they gaze into.
No, it's a guy drinking beer in his garage. What it really is. I mean, social media, you can become whatever persona you want to be.
It's incredible how the whole transfer portal has opened. It's like a new job opportunity. You can become a transfer portal expert and run a transfer portal service.
Look at Mel Kiper. He's made a great career out of 1 month of work a year telling us what he thinks about college. And you know, then the thing is, there's never a scorecard to see how did he get it right, did he get it wrong. Yeah. I'd love to see a scorecard for Mel Kiper at the end of the draft.
Where Mel was right.
Yeah. And where Mel was wrong.
Yeah.
And what was his overall score? It's just like the bracketologist, Lunardi. Okay, when it's all said and done, he picked the last four in, the first four out. How many of those did he get right?
I have no idea, honestly.
Yeah, by the time the actual tournament is announced, we completely forget what Lunardi was telling us.
It just kind of blows over.
Live and die by it for about a 3-week period. And then the actual tournament comes out. All we care about is give us our brackets. Where are we going? When are we playing? And it's like, wait a minute. What did Lunardi say? I have no idea. We never get a scorecard on Lunardi. But all we know is he'll be back next year.
Oh, yeah.
Doing the same thing, because people tune in and they live and die on the edge of their seat with everything Lunardi is going to tell them.
Bubble watch.
But we don't know if he's right, if he's wrong, what kind of percentage he has.
It's like when we looked up the groundhog and found out he was only right 39% of the time.
Yeah, what the heck? We've been living our whole life around what the groundhog tells us.
Come on,
shadow,
Phil.
No shadow. And now we find out it's all a farce.
It's all a farce.
46862 is part of your sports medicine text line. We're talking about Indiana.
Yeah.
I did not realize Elijah Malone, the big man out of Prairie Heights who went on and had great success at Grace in the NAIA, actually had a Zoom call with Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back and watched all the highlights, watched some game tape of Elijah Malone at Grace. And I'm like, oh, man. I hope Indiana says no, because I think there might be a school sitting closer to the Summit City that plays Division I basketball that could probably use. This is a guy who's he's listed as 6'10". I think we'll give him 6'9".
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
Big man.
Big guy.
250, 260 pounds, right? Yes. Big, solid guy.
Yeah.
And he steps outside and he's dropping in three balls.
Yeah, 37%.
Yeah, 37% this year on threes. Averaged 8.3 rebounds, averaged 17.3 points per game, 63% from the field, including 37% from three. And the 37% was not on 30 tries.
No.
I mean, he shot over 100 threes, averaged, over 2.5 threes per game, almost 3 threes per game, actually. Indiana at least getting a look at him, but I still, you look and there's a couple of names that have popped up prominently this weekend because visits are scheduled with, is it Farrell Payne?
I do believe it is Farrell.
And,
Farrell.
Farrell or Farrell. I think it's Farrell.
Okay.
Although I could be, my music background, Farrell. Miles Rice.
Yeah, he was really good for Washington State, the Pac-12 Rookie of the Year.
A lot of people are in consensus that Indiana's the favorite to snag Miles Rice.
The Wizards with their crystal balls?
The Wizards or the guy drinking beer in his garage. Both of them are in consensus that this guy's going to IU.
He'd be good.
I mean, admit it, though. You don't know. Guy could take his laptop out to the garage.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting in his underwear, drinking a beer, watching the Masters and saying, let me see. Today I'm going to put that Miles Rice is heading to IU.
I've got strong belief that Miles will be committing to IU his visit.
And I've got 100,000 followers that are going to believe me. We never know.
Nope.
46862, questions, comments, or suggestions. All right, we've got big news in today's update, so let's get to it. Spanning the globe for the biggest stories in sports, here's Adam Lundy.
All right, thanks, Brett. Well, we mentioned it. Floodwaters have once again risen at West Banco Arena in Wheeling, West Virginia, preventing the Wheeling Nailers from playing both of their games this weekend against the Walleye and the Cyclones. A makeup date for tonight's game is yet to be determined. The time for Sunday's game against the Cyclones is also yet to be determined for Wheeling. These games are crucial for the playoff standings in the Comets division of the ECHL the last weekend here.
I don't want to make light of the fact that they have a flood because obviously that's concern for the area businesses and the residents of Wheeling, but man, that kind of just stinks for the Comets.
Absolutely.
Now they're going to get some type of a break. They'll get to be able to sit back and see what the Comets do. And you brought up a great point earlier that this means Toledo doesn't have to take the trip to Wheeling the night before they have to come back and play the Comets.
Yeah. They'll be well rested.
They'll be rested while the Comets have to take on a physical Indy Fuel team.
Tonight, yeah.
Wow.
It's tough. Quick Masters update here for you. Bryson DeChambeau continues to lead the field. He's 8 under. He's through 13 of his second round. And Max Homa right behind him. He finished his second round today at 71 for 6 under total. And your guy Scotty Scheffler is in third at 5 under. He's in his 7th hole of the second round. So taking a look there at the Masters. And Ipe Mizuhara, the former interpreter for Shohei Ohtani, is now in federal custody, surrendering to law enforcement today.
Yeah, we've got more details now.
Yeah, we do.
The story is much clearer.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Mizuhara is accused of stealing more than $16 million now over 2 years from Dodger superstar to pay off gambling debts to an illegal sports book, according to an affidavit filed by federal authorities. Mizuhara is expected to appear in U.S. District Court today at 4 p.m., so right around now. And during that proceeding, an arraignment date will be set. Those are your top stories, Brett.
Unbelievable what he got away with.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was not just, there's some available money. I don't think he'll miss it. This is setting up the entire scheme to cover it up, to be able to keep it going, and then eventually the funds start drying up and you still owe people money. Anyway, bottom line, yeah, he's going to be locked up for a very, very long time. But it also puts Ohtani off the hook as being someone that's guilty. Now it's clear that Ohtani has been the victim in this process.
And you have to feel for him. He said that was like his best friend, and all this happens to him, man.
Somebody he trusted, somebody he never checked in. You know, it's not like he did a background check as far as, let's see what the guy's up to. He does have access to my bank account. Haven't heard from my bank in a while.
Huh.
But that's the other thing is when you get that kind of money, just filthy money, and you've got accountants, you've got financial advisors, you've got, you know, there's so many different people involved that Ohtani probably didn't track a lot of his exact balance. I mean, I look at my balance, and every $5 change, I freak out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he could be down $60 million and not even notice. Unbelievable.
Yes.
Those are today's top headlines with Adam Lundy. Coming up on the other side of the break, we got to talk to Justin Cohn, and part of what we got to talk about now is this news about West Banco Arena and what it's going to mean as far as finishing up the regular season and the playoff positioning. Justin Cohn next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. It is definitely a very full sports weekend this weekend. Tin Caps in action. They've got a home series against Lake County. The Comets, 2 home games this weekend, 3 in total. And a guy that's going to be all over the Comets is joining us right now on our Sports Rush guest line. It is the Journal Gazette's Justin Cohn. Big news, Coney, just came down that there's more flooding in Wheeling and it's going to affect this weekend's schedule. What does it mean exactly?
Well, I mean, we don't know if Wheeling's going to make up those games. They're saying they are, but I'm fairly skeptical that would actually happen. So that would lock Wheeling into a playoff spot. From a Fort Wayne perspective, I mean, I don't think there was much shot of them catching Wheeling, but what it does mean is that Toledo, which Fort Wayne plays on Saturday and Sunday, is now going to come into those games really well rested because they're not going to have a game tonight, and Fort Wayne is going to have a big game with Indianapolis. So it's one more kind of complication to trying to find a legitimate path for Fort Wayne to make it to the playoffs. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
Help me out, Justin. Tell me what the situation is, because I made the assumption, and shame on me yesterday, that the Comets were going to have to get some kind of help, because when you're on the outside looking in, generally you can't control your own destiny. And then I heard Shane talking this morning, the Comets were in if they win all three this weekend. Tell me exactly how this shakes out and what the Comets are playing for and what spot do they need to get to be able to play playoff hockey.
Well, the confusion on your part is probably because Fort Wayne has a game in hand over Kalamazoo and did have one over Wheeling. So Shane's right. The only way to guarantee that they get in and not have to worry about what happens with any other games would be to win all three remaining games. Then Fort Wayne is in. If they do anything else, then it gets a little complicated. Then it becomes dependent on what Kalamazoo did or how many of the wins this weekend came in regulation time opposed to overtime. It all gets very complicated. So, you know, the best thing they can do is win all three. If not, if Kalamazoo wins their last two games, then we all have to sit down with an abacus and figure out exactly what's what and how the games this weekend were won. But really, they got to get at least 5 points, is basically how I look at it right now.
Not easy, as the schedule makers have done the Comets no favors with Indy and Toledo. I don't know what the record is exactly against Indy, but it's not a team that I think the Comets have dominated, let's put it that way. And then you've got Toledo. Of course, the Comets have struggled against the Walleye this year. Is there any way to match up? And I know the Comets have three goaltenders available, I think. Is Brochu back, or is he still injured?
I believe he's still on IR through this weekend. So
okay.
I could be off on that, but I don't think he's available this weekend.
Okay, so they've got two. Between Parks and Fanti, is there an advantage head-to-head against either of these opponents? Does it matter? What do the Comets do in net?
That's a good question. I mean, to me, Ryan Fanti is the clear number one. Now, does that mean you play him tonight, or do you save him for Toledo? That's the million-dollar question, and he played on Wednesday. So I've kind of given up guessing what Jesse's going to do with the goaltending because I've typically been wrong. But my assumption would be that you play Fanti tonight, Parks tomorrow, and then Fanti on Sunday, with the hope that Sunday's game is, you know, really pivotal to getting in. But I don't know. You know, it's been tough to figure out what Jesse's going to do sometimes with the goalies.
Tell us about the Indy Fuel. What do we need to know about Indy, and what do the Comets have to do to get a win over the Fuel tonight?
Well, you know, Indy's the second-best team in the division. I think that's pretty clear. If Wheeling doesn't play, and we're having to determine this on winning percentage now, then tonight's game has become less important for Indianapolis. I think I'd have to really sit and do the math, but I don't think Wheeling could really catch Indy, even if Indy lost its last couple games. But, you know, they're playing for momentum. They've been playing really well over the last, let's say, a month, and as they've sort of separated themselves from the rest of the division. Nothing flashy, but they've got really good forwards. They're really good. If you turn the puck over, they will very quickly score. And that has been what Fort Wayne has struggled on against Indianapolis, is if they turn the puck over near their own blue line, then Indianapolis is really good about just making one pass to a guy cutting to the net and doing something with it. So that's the big thing they need to really watch out for. That and probably staying out of the penalty box. But you know, Indianapolis, they're not going to play the most exciting game, but a really effective game.
Shane talked about this morning as well, and we've mentioned it before on this show. The Comets seem to be a front runner. When they get the lead, they're a much better hockey team. Why is that? What have you seen with this team that doesn't make them perform quite as well when they fall behind?
Honestly, I would not agree with that analysis. Oh. I mean, you look at last week, they had two big wins, but they squandered one goal leads three times in one of them. Then the next game they come up, but they squander one goal leads twice. So I actually think it's the opposite. I don't love them with a lead. They seem to do better when their backs are up against the wall and they need to score. You know, if it's late in the third period, they're down a goal. That's when I tend to think they're better. But I, you know, hey, what this tells you is they're just unpredictable. You know, every night it's something different, and they just can't string together the 60 minutes of hockey. You know, one thing I will say that might be to Shane's point is defensively they have been a lot better lately. They've been, you know, limiting teams for the most part to one goal, two goals, and the offense has been a little bit more of an issue. So to me, and I wrote about it today, they need to just shoot the puck, you know. They keep making the extra pass. They'll get an odd man rush, a three-on-one, and rather than shooting it and looking for a rebound, they'll make an extra pass and then turn the puck over. Those are things that they need to really adjust for and just get a little bit more selfish in front of the opposing net.
Is this team a dump-and-chase team?
Yes. And when they're doing what they do best, they're good at it, but they haven't necessarily done that for a while. I mean, if you think back early in the season, the one thing that they were great at was dumping the puck in and then using that forecheck. And they would just, you know, grind teams away at the corners. And they're still doing the dump and chase, but the forecheck isn't as effective. Now, what's changed? I mean, there's an element of Nolan Vulcan being injured, and he was one of their better guys at doing that. I think there's a little bit of what I was just saying. They've just been trying to make that extra pass. As much as I don't love dump and chase, I think this team should be doing it, but they need to get the forecheck going a little bit better because I haven't been wild about it in the last couple of weeks.
Okay, so let's go to the what-if scenario that we really don't want to think about, but we do have to address since, you know, it's high stakes this weekend. If the Comets lose, what has to happen for them to be eliminated from the playoffs? Who is it that has to win? And if that happens, the Comets are done.
If I'm understanding, I mean, to me, it's all dependent on Kalamazoo. So, you know, Fort Wayne still would need to leapfrog Kalamazoo. So they still need to get one, at least 2 points. And then you hope that Kalamazoo somehow loses its last two games. But that's dreaming. They're playing at Iowa. Iowa has not looked good. They've got three players who were arrested last weekend, including their captain. They're a mess right now. Now, the one thing I will say is then they got to get on the bus, come back like 5.5 hours, lose an hour, and play at Indianapolis tomorrow. And that isn't the easiest game because it's Indianapolis's regular season finale. I think it's fan appreciation night, all that stuff. So I think the best case is you hope that you get a split from those two Kalamazoo games and then Fort Wayne can figure out a way to get 4 points out of their last three games.
Justin, I want to address that situation in Iowa and just ask a question. Maybe you know the answer, maybe you don't. But, of course, in the NFL, NBA, where image is everything, if something happens like that with players, they're subject to perhaps suspensions or some type of discipline from the league. What's the situation in the ECHL? When guys get arrested and have a situation like what happened in Iowa, does the league get involved or is it up to the team and organization?
That's a great question. Usually it's the teams. I can't think of any specific instances where the league has at least publicly stepped in. I know there have been a couple guys through the years a little bit questionable, and the league has kind of we'd rather you not sign this guy or really going to be closely watching it. But, I mean, Allen had a player last year named Spencer Asichuk, who's been a long-time really good player. He got arrested and caught as part of a basically a child prostitution ring. And I'm not saying that he necessarily knew any of that, but it was a big media-watched case in Texas. And to my knowledge, they left everything to the team to determine when he could play again, which was a while. So to your point with Iowa, if they wanted to play those guys tonight, could they do it? I mean, I think if the team wanted to do that, they could. And the league would probably allow that to happen. But, you know, a lot of that is me just kind of guessing here because I can't recall something where the league publicly was like, this guy can't play pending the resolution of their legal, you know, issues like we see with team leagues like the NFL or NHL.
Justin, I'm on assignment tonight, so I'm going to count on you to keep tweeting or posting or whatever you do now on X, because I'll be following along what the Comets are doing tonight, of course, tomorrow night, and then Sunday to wrap up the season. A lot of stuff to keep an eye on. Thanks so much for jumping on with us. Have a great weekend.
All right. Good luck to you, too.
Yep, that is at Sports Icone on X, formerly known as Twitter. And so if you want to keep up with what the Comets are doing, nobody better in covering the beat than Sports Icone. In fact, we were talking about this, that how fortunate are we to be in a market where you've got somebody that follows every Tin Caps game, that follows every Comets game. You know, it's in today's day and age of journalism and print media, it's a rarity that we get this kind of coverage from Dylan Sin with the Tin Caps and from Justin Cohn covering the Comets. So we certainly appreciate it. And you can follow Sports Icone, C-O-H-N, on X.
I still hate calling it that, Brett.
I know. At some point, we've got to transition. It is X. We could try to call it Twitter, but that's not really what it is.
It's just a shame.
Yeah.
I miss Twitter.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Give us your thoughts. We'll take a break. When we come back, we've got more to talk about with IU and the transfer portal. Also, what is the portal doing as far as damage to college basketball? We'll talk about that as well. It is all before 5 o'clock, and in our 5 o'clock hour, we talked Matt Taylor, voice of the Colts. All coming up on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. What is the correct name? Grilled cheese sandwich or cheese toasty? Give me something, Adam. Grilled cheese sandwich or cheese? Is cheese toasty regional? Is that?
I think it's regional, but
I mean, I always called it cheese toast. That's what I was.
I say grilled cheese.
Do you?
Yeah.
I've always called it a cheese toasty.
Ooh,
we need a Twitter poll.
Yeah, I can make it.
Or an X poll.
X poll.
Yeah, we gotta have an X poll.
All right, I'll make it.
Cheese toasty or grilled cheese sandwich. But regardless of what you call it, today is National Grilled Cheese Sandwich Day.
Mm.
Or as I like to refer to it, National Cheese Toasty Day. What kind of cheese?
I like Colby Jack.
Colby Jack.
Colby Jack and cheddar.
Now, when I grew up, my mom always made it with Velveeta, which I don't even know if that's really cheese. I'm not sure exactly what Velveeta is, but it tasted good.
It's a cheese product. Now, do you spell toasty? Is it T-O-A-S-T-I-E?
Yes.
Or T-O-A-S?
Well, I spelled it I-E, but maybe I spelled it wrong.
Maybe.
Remember, you don't have to write cheese toasty all that much when you're eating them.
Yeah, you just ask your mom for one.
Yeah, that's all you got to do. What are we having for lunch? Cheese toasties. What are we having for dinner? Cheese toasties. We didn't have a big budget for food when I was growing up. We had a lot of cheese toasties.
Hey, I'll raise you one. I had a lot of cubed ham and cheese when I was a kid for dinner.
Our meals were cheese toasties, hot dogs, hamburgers, and goulash.
Ooh, which good old pot of goulash.
I don't even know what goes into goulash, but I ate a lot of it as a kid.
All right. The poll is up. 1380 The Fan. On X, formerly known as Twitter. Is it a grilled cheese sandwich or a cheese toasty? Go ahead and go and vote.
Give us a vote on that. Because I've always referred to it as a cheese toasty. I understand a lot of people call it grilled cheese. Just sounds weird to me. All right, so Indiana, work in the portal. We all know that the Hoosiers and Mike Woodson are very active in the portal this year, and they need to be. But some of the names that we've heard mentioned and tied in with the Hoosiers, Tony Perkins out of Iowa, local product out of Indianapolis. Now, I have heard that he is shopping his services for perhaps as much as $500,000 a year. Connor Hickman, who a lot of people think Indiana is the landing spot, eventual landing spot for the guard out of Bradley. He's already visited IU. He's 6'3", 14 points per game, but the most impressive number, he can shoot 40.2% from behind the three-point line. Now, ideally, what I think Indiana needs, they've got to get a veteran point guard. They can't rely on Gabe Cupps to be their point guard. I'm nothing against Cupps, but if you're going to win and win now, and this is the contract year for Mike Woodson, then you got to get a veteran point guard who can score and can hopefully hit threes. Then you've got to get real shooting guards. You can't trust a Trey Galloway. You can't trust Anthony Leal. You've got to get guards that are going to drop it in at 40% or better. That's where Connor Hickman, a guy that comes into play, hitting over 40%. You need a stretch four, maybe even a 3-4, but McKenzie Mbako, certainly he's fine as a slash guy, and I think his game is going to develop from behind the three-point line. But I think they need to have that complimentary stretch four to go with Malik Renew, who I don't think is necessarily a guy that teams are afraid of outside the three-point line. Yeah, he hit a few last year, but I think he's going to have to play more around the basket, especially with Khalil Ware being out of the lineup now as he goes pro. And then I think eventually you're going to have to get big man depth. You've got to get another big guy to provide depth inside. Also, for those that follow the Hoosiers, remember the name Logan Duncombe?
Yes.
Came in about 2-3 years ago, and we had him on this show when he was signed. He was a big-time recruit. Left Indiana, ended up, I believe, at Xavier, and now he has transferred from Xavier going to Winthrop. So he has kind of just taken step-by-step right on down. but Indiana does need probably depth at the center position and just bring another big in. But you mentioned it earlier, Pharrell Payne out of Minnesota and Miles Rice out of Washington State, both scheduled to visit Indiana this weekend.
This weekend, yeah. I like the looks of Pharrell Payne. I think he was a good big man Minnesota.
Solid player. I don't know if you'd call him a true big, but has size. So
maybe
like a power forward type guy.
Yeah,
But anyway, that's scheduled for this weekend. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Now, when we talk about the transfer portal, I think there's a problem that the NCAA at the same time kind of came out and made two rules at about the same time that both favored the player, and it shifted the power so far into the player's court that now we've lost all control of college basketball. One is NIL. And a lot of that was decided through the courts, but NIL and then the transfer portal. So every player that it's not just, you know, it used to be, I don't think I'm being developed, my coach has left, or I'm not getting enough minutes. Now it's, I'm not getting paid enough cash here. I got to go see what the other schools have to offer. And it just, to me, it's ruining college basketball. You've got 1,500 players in Division I that are in the portal. And it's like, why? This is my Nancy Kerrigan for just one moment. Why?
Why?
But you've got so many players that have entered the portal that now teams and fan bases, especially, fan bases cannot kind of become intimate with their team in a way where, you know, you fall in love with a player and you can't wait to see what they do next year. And now it's just, gosh, I hope they stay.
Right. Yeah, you can't emotionally attach yourself to any of the players that you like because there's a chance that they just might be gone next season.
And I told you when the Mastodons played Kentucky back in, I think it was 2018, I said one of the things that the Kentucky fan base was complaining about is this whole freshman thing of bringing in a new class. Half of them go into the NBA. After 1 year, they're one and done. They said the biggest problem they had as fans was they no longer could get any real feel for the players. Mm-hmm. We'd see, you know, they'd see them, they'd start to get used to them, their game would develop, and then they'd be gone. And then there'd be a whole nother roster the next year. And they say, you know, as fans of a program, we want to be able to see and cheer for a guy for 3 or 4 years. We get a good, you know, we get a good freshman in. We want to know that our tickets and our season tickets, we're supporting that player for the next 3, 4 years he plays college basketball. And it wasn't that way at Kentucky, and the fans didn't like it. Well, now you're going to have that everywhere.
Oh, yeah, everywhere.
I mean, most teams, I mean, a lot of teams are struggling just to keep any of their starters in-house to come back next year.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really good programs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Wright State losing a number of guys. Northern Kentucky has lost a couple of guys. You've got Green Bay lost their best player. I mean, just in the Horizon League, you see guys that are departing. And, you know, it's a combination of NIL, cash, versus how much do I like a place and you know, do I want to stay loyal? And loyalty is almost a thing of the past. I feel like loyalty went out in the 50s, you know. It's,
yeah, you're loyal to the bag, as they say.
You're loyal to the dollar.
Yep.
But NIL and transfer, something, one or the other has to be done. And I think the only way that the NCAA can get any kind of control over this is to control the transfer rules.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you just have to find a way.
Because they've lost control of NIL, and they're not going to get it back. They've got no way to get it back at this point, but they can make it very simple. They tried the one-year free transfer, and then they all of a sudden came back and kept going the other direction toward the player and saying, now you can go multiple years without having to sit out. I just don't like the direction college basketball is going.
Yeah,
you now have teams like DePaul hiring general managers. That's the title.
Yeah.
I mean, how much more pro sports do we have to get than having someone on the staff that's known as the general manager?
It's just a different game, different era, my friend.
Laval Jordan, former coach of Butler, is now the general manager for Chris Holtmann in Chicago with the DePaul Blue Demons. 46862, give us your thoughts on college basketball. Is it just something that has cycloned out of control and there's no getting it back? Is it just something that college basketball is going to change and we have to change with it? Give us your thoughts. 46862. Tin Caps tonight, 7 o'clock at Parkview Field. They'll take on the Lake County Captains. It's game 2 of the series. Should be game 4 by now, but a couple of rainouts. And then tomorrow they will make up one game, because it'll be a doubleheader that starts at 1 o'clock, and then the second game, after a 7-inning contest, will be another 7-inning contest 30 minutes after the first one ends, and on Sunday, it wraps up 9 innings starting at 1 o'clock. Now, you might say, wait a minute, I'm doing the math. That's only 5 games. They were supposed to play 6. Mm-hmm. You're exactly right, my friend, and congratulations on your math expertise. Your third-grade teacher's proud of you. But when we look at it, what's going to happen is that leftover game is going to have to be made up when the Tin Caps go to Lake County.
Yep.
And one game will be played as part of a doubleheader where the Tin Caps, I believe, will be the home team on the scoreboard.
Interesting.
Or in other words, they'll be the team in the field first. They'll be the, because it is a game that was originally to be played in Fort Wayne.
Yeah.
That's what I believe is going to happen. And so it's, you know, nothing is official, but that is what generally happens in this. If a team is going to play again in the first half of the season and you can get it made up when your two teams hook up at the other site, it ends up being made up. So Lake County is getting a bonus doubleheader out of the weather in Fort Wayne this week.
And so are we, and we'll be at the ballpark tonight for some Tin Caps action.
Yeah, you're going to be there tonight.
I'll be there.
Instead of being the guy pushing the buttons in the studio, you get to break out, come out to the ballpark, hang out with Mike Maz, and maybe.
I don't know nothing. Hey, taking a look at the text line, we kind of sparked some conversation with our grilled cheese talk here.
Yeah.
Somebody said, Swiss cheese on a grilled cheese sandwich, slice of tomato, and a bit of mayo.
Oh, now they're really loading it up. That's a stuffed grilled cheese.
Sounds good to me.
Or as I like to refer to it, a stuffed cheese toasty, where you, you know, it's like a baked potato. You can put the butter and the sour cream, but then when you start putting all the other stuff, now it's a stuffed baked potato.
Oh, I thought it was a loaded baked potato.
Oh, it's a loaded baked potato.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
That's
Let's see, Truck and Phil weighing in. Hey, Truck and Phil, he says, growing up, it was cheese toasties for us.
There you go, cheese toasties. Maybe that's just like a 60s, 70s thing.
Maybe.
You're a child of the 90s?
Barely, too. You know, only 3 years of the 90s.
So sad. So sad.
Somebody else said, having a grilled cheese sandwich for supper with a thin layer of mayo over the butter. Yummy. Try it.
Mm.
And then taking a look at our poll here at 1380 The Fan on X. Right now, grilled cheese is in the lead at 61.5%. Cheese toasty, 38.5%.
Okay. It is the same thing, though, right?
Oh, it's the same thing.
Same thing, just different name.
Go ahead and vote on that.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Questions, comments, or suggestions, 46862. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get you updated with what's happening at the Masters, including a look at the leaders on the scoreboard, and we'll give you an update on Tiger Woods. Will he keep the streak alive and make the cut this weekend at Augusta? You know, I'm concerned. I'll just say this, and I'll talk more about it after the top of the hour. I'm concerned about his health because second nine, the back nine today, he was doing a lot of bending over and stretching, a lot of like rubbing the back. I mean, believe me, as a guy who deals with a sore back, I saw Tiger Woods doing things that was just frightening to me. It was making my back hurt because I knew what he was feeling when he was doing it.
Yeah.
You're feeling that poking pain going down your back and you're trying to stretch and try to relieve that pressure. And so I'm a little worried that he gets, you know, back to his room and I'm sure he's got massage therapist and everybody else that's going to work on the back for him. But it might be one of those things where he makes the cut, keeps the streak alive, but he's unable to continue. We'll see. We'll see. He's got the best people in the business that'll take care of him. But we'll talk more about that coming up after the top of the hour. This is The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.